Welcome to Teaching Writing, Ideas and Strategies. My name is Roger Graves. I'm an Associate Director of the Center for Teaching and Learning at the University of Alberta, Professor in English and Film Studies, and Director of the Writing Across the Curriculum Program. In today's podcast, I'm going to be talking about visuals. As a word person, my first instinct, of course, is to think about words, and if you're teaching writing, you're probably also thinking about that. But increasingly, over the last, 20, 30 years, the role of visuals has just gotten more and more important. Back in 1991, when Tim Berners-Lee began the World Wide Web, it was essentially a document-only, a text-only exchange program. About 3 or 4 years after that, he invented the protocol for sharing images as well as texts. When that happened, the web became something much more than it had been. I don't think he intended it to have that effect, but it showed that in scientific research articles, there's a lot of visual information that has to be incorporated. Of course, soon after that, around 1994, 95, something like that, commercials started to appear on the web because it now had the ability to convey visual information as well as textual information. We all know where that's gone. Today, I want to talk about three different kinds of things. The first is my experience working with some chemical and materials engineering professors as they were trying to find a way to talk to their graduate students about writing, and that included visuals. The second thing I want to talk a little bit about is how we've described or try to help students in first year to talk about using visuals in their documents. And the third thing I want to do is talk a little bit more elaborately than that on how we work with professional and technical writing students about how they can use visuals in their documents. About 8 or 9 years ago, I started working with Suzanne Cresta, John Nitschke, Jacob Massilia, and Murray Gray in the Chemical and Engineering Department at the University of Alberta. We wrote an article together called Writing Well, Building Traction and Triumph into Co-Authorship, one of my favorite titles ever, I have to admit. In the process of writing that article and sitting down and talking with them, I asked them about their process in creating a research article. Where do you start? How do you get going on that? And one of the things that I remember them telling me was that when they sit down to write a research article, they will start with tables of data. And these tables of data are the things that are central to what they're doing. They become images or visuals that are in their research articles, that they are the tables. And so their writing process begins with the visuals, and then they write their texts around them. Now, this was news to me, and it isn't the way I tend to work, but it was really interesting because it showed me that visuals are, first of all, extremely important to what they're doing. Secondly, it is like the first thing that they have that they begin with. In addition, visuals are important for their work because often they'll communicate their work through posters, and posters are very visual. In this article that we did together, we attached a bunch of communication exercises as a kind of an appendix. And the fifth one is called a visual abstract. Now, I've encountered these a little bit in my own writing where some journals have asked us to supply that kind of thing. And it's a bit of a mind bender to put one together. It makes you really rethink your own work. What is the actual thing that's the most important? The closest I've come to that recently, however, is creating the quote-unquote cover art for these podcasts, because when I first sat down to do that, I just drew an absolute blank about how am I going to convey an abstract concept through an image. So it's a great way to get yourself thinking that way, and it really gets you to hone in on what's essential and what you've done. Well, that's great for graduate students, but how do we work with first-year undergraduates? In the Brief Pearson Handbook, we've got a whole part of the book, Section 4, called Designing and Presenting, in which we try to boil down this information for undergraduates in a way that's manageable. The first thing we talk about is using standard designs. So if you think about a LinkedIn page, for example, or Facebook page or anything like that, those are templates that students fill in. They don't really have to design them so much as use them. And so that's the first bit of advice that we give to undergraduates. You don't have a lot of skills in this area, so a quick way to get started and still produce something which looks good, is to use a template. So that's the first thing that we would advise you to do, is to direct students, if you're looking for some kind of visuals in your documents, direct students to a kind of a template that format that they can use. In Chapter 13, we talk about how to communicate with words and images. And the first thing we talk about is how to use images to enhance text. We show some graphics there, one of a car encountering a moose, another one which is supposed to indicate hot springs, but looks to me like a couple of people in a pot that are boiling. And then there's a license plate that says Tooth Fixer. The words there are meant to conjure images of a dentist, of course. So one of the functions of words, then, is to enhance what's been written down. In the rest of the chapter, we try to introduce students to the idea that pictures, particularly, can be static or they can be dynamic. Each picture is taken from a particular point of view, and you need to sort of think hard about what point of view you're working from and what that's conveying. Another important aspect of photographs is the focus. What is it in the photograph that's in focus, and then how are you framing that? What are the other things that are around that text, that image? Finally, we talk about how to create interest in visual texts. So that has a lot to do with point of view and the angle and putting people in the text when possible. In the rest of the chapter, we talk about creating tables, charts, and graphs. When to use tables, as with the chemical engineering professors, what they're using them for. So one of the reasons for using a table is to present a summary of several factors, to include exact numbers because the exact numbers matter, and to give an orderly arrangement so that the readers can locate and compare information. We also talk about bar charts and how they give information that can be easily compared, line graphs, which show changes over time, pie charts, which show a percentage of a whole, organizational charts, and flow charts, which show how a process is at work. In the chapter on presentations, we give an example of how to create good visuals for your presentation. As I'm sure you're aware, most people in a PowerPoint presentation are going to give you a lot of words and almost nothing else. And so we're trying to give an example there about the carbon tax. And in that example, you can give four bullet points, which give the data or the words around that. But you, instead of that, or in place of some of that information, you could use an image of air or gas pollution coming from a lineup of cars, which then accentuates the text and what you're trying to say in that text. A few years ago, there was a book called How to Lie with Statistics, which I have in the basement somewhere. And I saw in the library the other day and checked out a new book, a new sort of an update of it. It's called A Field Guide to Lies by Daniel Levitin, in which he says, among other things, the graph maker can get away with all kinds of lies simply armed with the knowledge that most readers will not look at the graph very closely. So he's talking about all kinds of ways in which you can misrepresent data in graphs and tables. When we talk to technical communication students about graphs and visuals, we talk about the stuff we've already mentioned that's in the brief Pearson handbook, but in the Strategic Guide to Technical Communication, which we published with Broadview Press, we go into more detail about this for technical communication students. So in addition to pie charts, line graphs, and bar charts, we also talk about dot charts, tables, maps, photographs, line drawings, and Gantt charts. Levitin's book really sort of gets at how you can misrepresent data through images. This is not something that's new, of course. Edward Tufte, in his book called Visual Explanations, also talked about similar kinds of things. And some of the things they draw attention to is, where do those axes start? Where does the numbers start at the bottom axis? Tufte also talks about the trend in which people use a graphic and set it in a table to represent a number. And he draws our attention to the idea that those graphics often occupy more space than the number itself would indicate, as the graphic, in one case, in the book that we use where we have hearts. As the heart gets bigger, it gets bigger disproportionately to the numbers. And so that itself is a kind of a misrepresentation there. I began this podcast by talking about some work that I did with some chemical engineering professors 8 or 9 years ago. And I'd like to end it by talking about some work I'm currently doing with PhD student Shahin Mogadasi-Sarabi and Heather Graves, as well as Xavier Gutierrez. And in this chapter that Shahin is working on primarily, she's talking about visual information in mathematics articles. And so how does that visual information work in those articles? And in that, she's defined three kinds of ways in which those visuals work. First, they are ontological. That is to say, they bring a concept into existence. And that's the visual doing this, by the way. The second is evidential. So this is another function of visuals in those articles, where they provide evidence to support what the article is saying in its argument. And the third one is epistemological, which is to say that the visuals tell us what we know about the concept under discussion. So those are just some of the things that she's talking about in that chapter. And I think it's really, really interesting, and it's really important for us to know that As we look at visuals in documents, there are ways in which we can talk to students about that, which are pretty elementary, sort of how do you use these different kinds of visuals. But as students get into graduate school, they have to start rethinking how they look at those visuals, and they have to see them in a much more complex ways. And as we argued in that article with the chemical engineering profs, you have to learn to read them differently. So to sum that up, you have to read them not for information as a novice would, but as an expert would read it. You have to read for the argument. Well, thanks very much for listening to this podcast. I hope you found it useful and interesting. I hope that you'll follow the podcast at rogergraves.podomatic.com. And if you're interested in following up on this with me, please email me. I'm roger.graves@ualberta.ca.